Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Good evening and welcome to the History of Alchemy podcast. I'm Travis Dow.
And I'm Pete Coleman from the Bohemican podcast.
Today we're going to talk about theurgy, thaumaturgy, the debate of magic versus science, a bunch of things here, but we've been holding off on this show for a while simply because there are too many related areas of like philosophy, theology, and occult that have to do with what we're going to talk about, and it's just too much to have this show in a vacuum. It would have been way too long. But now we have enough basic understanding from other shows like the Kabbalah episode, Hermeticism. We've covered those. I think we're ready enough to talk about theurgy and thaumaturgy by themselves. And at the center of what we're going to talk about is, again, this kind of debate on whether alchemy somehow involved magic. Was it purely a natural process? And opinions on this varied vastly. Before we get into the different views on alchemy, let's get through some definitions first.
Well, Travis, let's take a look at the word thaumaturgy. Thaumaturgy can be thought of as a sort of magic, if you will. To some folks, to keep this in mind, throughout history, mathematics could have been thought of as sort of a magic sort of operation as well. So, take that with a grain of salt. But this can be held sort of hand in hand with Kabbalistic theories.
Like math.
Very much like math, sure. Mathematics. In its simplest definition, thaumaturgy can be thought of as performing miracles. There's a strong theological aspect to it all. And if you're religious, you probably wouldn't think of someone who does thaumaturgy as a magician or a thaumaturgist. You probably would call them a wonder worker or a miracle creator.
Yeah.
Like a saint performing miracles through God's help, even.
Thaumaturgy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or maybe the belief of healing by the laying on of hands.
Thaumaturgy. Sure. Yeah. It comes from the Greek words thauma, meaning like miracle or marvel, and ergon, meaning work. So really, like miracle worker. Yeah. John Dee anglicized the word. And Dee, again, was also a mathematician, among many, many other things. And, mathematics, especially in his definition, could be the layman's miracles. Think of like the occult following that Pythagoras had, for instance. So it's kind of in that vein. Kabbalah has a mathematical aspect to it. So it's kind of in that vein that if mathematics can be seen as something to do with the occult or magic, thaumaturgy definitely fits the bill. It's just, if we talk of Kabbalistic alchemists, for instance, which, we did in a previous podcast, and we'll touch more about that in future shows, an understanding of thaumaturgy can help to understand that. There's just a correlation. We're not saying Kabbalah is thaumaturgy, because it's not. But theosophy, and we'll define that in a little bit later, there's just a lot of correlation between alchemists that were Kabbalist or thought of themselves as such and thought of themselves as thaumaturgists or had to do with theosophy. There's just a correlation. You can kind of talk about magic or occult in general, but we're kind of trying to break that apart a little bit. So when we talk about certain alchemists, we know what we're talking about.
Travis, you mentioned that there's a connection to the religious background to this, but there also is a religious connection to the terminology that we're going to approach right now, which is theurgy, which is perhaps related in many ways, but thought as more of a way to connect with God himself. When Christians fast or pray to get God's favor, that's theurgy. So if it's a rain dance or if it's a sacrifice, we can consider it to be in that circle of knowledge.
Some kind of ritualistic thing you do to communicate with God, ask for God's help. So, yeah.
And we talk of alchemy here, but theurgy is an important aspect of Neoplatonic alchemists as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like in Neoplatonism, theurgy was a form of meditation to be closer to God. We've mentioned that a bunch. Because God himself was unobtainable. He was just too distant. And not like in Christian theology, for instance. God was far out there in Neoplatonism. So we talked about this in several shows. Alchemists contemplating God in the lab, for instance, and meditating over their incubator. Okay, that's theurgy, for instance. Another reason I combined them both together in one show is that theurgy isn't just praying for like a better crop and hoping. For instance, the Neoplatonist Iamblichus and other Neoplatonists thought that theurgy was strong enough of a force to do things like make statues talk. So to some, clearly in the realm of magic, right? If you're praying and a statue starts talking, that's magic. At least in one definition of the word. To other people, theurgy would not be magic. It's just praying. You know, there's nothing magical about praying in a different definition. So that's why we're defining the word. It could have various meanings to various groups.
Travis, maybe I could ask this question really quickly about the connection. Would people actually draw this magical connection to some of the quote-unquote miracles that happen when statues of Mother Mary would weep blood, or maybe there might be some kind of divine sort of intervention with inanimate objects?
So here's the difference, is that thaumaturgy or theurgy, you are doing something through God or with God's help. If a Virgin Mary statue starts crying by herself, you didn't ask for that to happen.
I see.
Okay. That's a miracle directly from God. So that's just a miracle. Whereas if
there's a cause and effect in what you're talking
about
here.
If you say, I'm going to make that statue cry, that's thaumaturgy, because you're not doing it. You're doing it through God's help. It's like you could say in the New Testament that if Paul or Peter healed somebody, that's thaumaturgy. If God healed somebody, then that's a miracle. So it is a miracle, but you know, you're not doing it. You're doing it because you have faith in God.
Well, it's basically asking for divine intervention, like you said, Travis. Whereas thaumaturgy is more like asking for God's power to create miracles yourself. So let's throw this theosophy into this as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is a wisdom received from God, maybe on the nature of God, for all we know, and could be through Kabbalah,
for instance. Yeah, as an example.
All right, or through probably divination.
Yeah. Reading teacup leaves, astrology—that's all. That all falls under theosophy.
Well, sure. This kind of goes into one of our favorite characters on this show, Edward Kelly. Supposedly, got on an alchemical recipe from the angels that he was talking to.
Yeah,
right. Remember, we talked about that in a few mm-hmm. podcasts ago, which he did using theurgy and gosha, which is summoning angels or demons.
Yeah,
right. They would pray and fast before using their scrying glass to summon the angels.
Yeah, so that's just an example that when I was reading on Edward Kelly, it kind of involves a bunch of things here. So praying and fasting is theurgy. Okay, gosha is summoning angels. It could also mean summoning demons, but in his case, summoning angels.
Or black magic.
Yeah, but in his case, they clearly believed they were summoning angels. And then theosophy, in the sense that these angels told him an alchemical recipe. So that is knowledge he got from God, or from angels in this case. So you see in one example to, you know, fast and pray, theurgy, summon angels, goetia, and then knowledge they got from the angels, theosophy. So I think we've kind of defined the words and given an example, but we talked about theosophy in our Hermeticism episode. And, you know, we're just kind of trying to tie it all together here. And
well, also in our Kabbalah episode, when we also talked about the Kabbalistic methods to find hidden meanings within things, right? Or finding something hidden within the scriptures itself, even divinely inspired scriptures that are all examples of theosophy.
Yeah. So, in fact, Kabbalah is a good example of theosophy mixed with mathematics. So, in that case, mathematics clearly has some kind of a divine influence. So yeah, Kabbalah is a good example of theosophy, for instance. So when we bring it back to alchemy, there's a debate that saying, so was alchemy done through magic or some sort of divine intervention? So when you're talking about magic in that sense, you're not talking about like sympathetic magic necessarily or some other vague sense of magic, but you're talking about like theurgy or thaumaturgy, so like magic, but through God's will. So is alchemy done through magic? Is it done through some sort of divine intervention? These are debates that happened. Or was it just imitating some natural process, which that could be something akin to science, right? Like,
we have philosophers and alchemists who debated on these topics for centuries, and the full discourse would cover books and books and books. So let's just kind of distill this all down to, just get it down to the minutia, if we can. First, we had people that would argue whether transmutation is even possible. Examples on both sides would all be given, of course, quoting Avicenna and Aristotle, to name a few.
Yeah, I mean, this was, like you said, this went on for centuries. So this debate would kind of, centuries, it actually, this debate lasted for more than a millennium. So there's a lot of arguments, pro and con, whether transmutation is even possible. On one side, it could be argued that alchemy is an art, and like art, it imitates nature, and therefore the gold created is not really gold. So even if you had, this would be argued that even if you can't tell the difference, if this alchemical gold passes all the tests, it still wouldn't have, like, let's say, the healing effects, for example, that people thought that gold had. So something would differentiate it from the actual natural gold, okay?
On the other hand, people would give examples of transmutations carried out by humans all the time, with the help from nature. A farmer planting seeds to raise crops, people burning ferns and to ash, and I guess even add sand into this to create glass. Those are some examples given where humans are using nature in a way to transmutate one thing to another.
Yeah, so, and there was a bunch of examples given on about that in this debate that, of course, transmutation is possible.
We see it in everyday life.
Yeah, make some dough, you stick it in an oven, bam, bread, transmutation, bam, magic. You know, so like
it might be easier. It sounds kind of a given up to say that it's so simplistic, though.
But like, say, but that those were the examples given. Like, let's say fern to glass. Okay, you have a plant, and then it becomes glass. Of course, that's possible. We know it is. Is that transmutation? I mean, it's, you know, plant matter to glass. Why would it be any different to say plant matter to gold? I mean, you know.
Oh, now, can we even go, and they probably wouldn't have known this at the time, but can we even say that fossil fuels that were once, fauna from a millennia or from millions of years ago, or animal, decayed animal, would be turned into a combustible, fuel?
If you make synthetic oil, yeah. So that's, yeah. So oil is created over millennia, over millions of years even, in the natural world, but we can create synthetic oils. So is that transmutation? Sure. I mean, so these are, I mean, obviously, in retrospect, we can look back and say, well, this is possible because of this, and this is not possible because of this. But that's the arguments they used. And to us, some of them would seem kind of simplistic. Sure, like a farmer planting a crop, is that transmutation? Well, it's an argument they used. But alchemists would often, but not always, and depending on the time period, would try to stay clear of the reputation of being a sorcerer. And we saw this many, many times.
Well, that was sometimes a death sentence.
Yeah. Yeah. So they would insist that in a lab, they're replicating the natural process in which the earth transmutates different metals into higher ones. There's no magic involved at all. And this was generally trying to avoid the powers that be that, you know, didn't like sorcery. So they would say, no, this is all, you know, it's like cooking in a kitchen. I'm not doing any magic here. I'm just, you know, mixing ingredients and calcinating it and sublimating it and distilling it and bam, gold. So in this way, the furnace and sulfur and mercury were thought to be kind of a replication of what happens in nature. And the people that, you know, we're trying to escape this reputation would be very ardent about this. So,
but then we also have people in the camp that insist that gold can only be created with God's help. And we see this a lot, you know. So in a way that this is at least theurgy. The recipe itself can be gotten from Theosophy. Edward Kelly got a recipe from angels,
right,
for example.
Yeah.
We saw in Zosimos of Panopolis in that episode that the higher beings did find a way to help, so that it's just a matter of astronomy to determine whether it's God or not, or the demons that are helping you out.
Yeah, yeah. Zosimos was like, someone higher than you is helping, so do it at this time of year so you get God's help, otherwise you're getting demons' help. So, which that could be bad.
So that kind of gets us to a summarization of the debate between magic versus nature, Travis.
Yeah. So again, so it was debated whether transmutation was possible at all, whether it was possible to create something real or only an imitation. So art was used as an example here, you know, that if and this went back to Greeks, that if you're creating art, you're not creating the real thing, you're creating a mirror image of the thing. You're creating a clone, you're creating a form, not the, you know, this is like, this goes back to like Platonic or Neoplatonic like forms versus, you know, the actual thing that you see. And then it was debated whether the transmutation was possible without God's help and will. Some thought, many would say that if your recipe failed, that's because God didn't want it to work. So that was kind of also a defense that charlatans could use, but, you know, hey.
That was their escape route.
Yeah, and then there were always those who knowingly made fake gold and tried to sell it as something else. But even leaving charlatans out of this for a minute, the genuine belief and arguments for or against alchemy varied vastly over the centuries.
So we need to kind of put this in perspective here, Travis. Was the gold created genuine or by an imitation? Was the alchemical dabbling with evil forces or done by the pious with the will of God? Or were people imitating nature and therefore simply perfecting a certain science?
Yeah. So, I mean, the answers to those questions are more various than the number of alchemists will probably ever cover on this show. There's just, you know, this is a millennia of debate and everybody had their input. But these are very interesting questions to ask about each person we discuss in our show. So each person, we can see their stance and their viewpoint on where they fall on this debate of, like, magic versus science. Is this done with the help of God, or can you do this on your own? You know, are you creating real gold, or are you creating a damn good replica? These all alchemists had a different viewpoint. I mean, we like the Chinese alchemist we talked about, even who doesn't fall in this direct line of history in Egyptian Greek alchemy, but you know he didn't lie about it at all. He's saying you're creating a very good imitation. It has the same health benefits, but it's not actually gold. So you know, some people didn't lie about that. Some people maybe deluded themselves thinking that they were creating real gold because it just passed all the tests. So throughout the span of alchemy, these questions were at the center of the debate, of its merits, and I think spending some time on the subject should clarify how alchemy was viewed through its history.
Well, Travis, I think this is a good episode in the sense that it kind of combines a lot of our other previous episodes, but yet doesn't get away from the core issue of talking about, you know, can this transmutation be done? Can this be done through God's help or God's will? You know, we also have to look at this as the sign of the times, when these particular alchemists were living in these certain times, because they had to play ball with either a potentate or an emperor, so they weren't burned alive at the stake, or also burned alive at the stake from the church. So it is a kind of a thin line that they got to walk. But I think if you were to add in a little bit of the science, it kind of would cover your butt.
Yeah.
If we can use that in a 21st century term.
Yeah. That's pretty much it for this show. I want to make one little announcement here, and that is that both Bohemican and History of Alchemy were in a collage show.
A History Podcasters collage show.
Yep, which you can find on thehistorypodcasters.com, and then click podcast. And the first series was called Unsung Heroes, and in that very first episode, you'll find great podcasters like Jamie Redfern, who did the Arab Spring and a history of Alexander the Great, history of Hannibal, Peter Adamson, who did History of Philosophy Without Any Gaps, Benjamin and Adam Ashwell, who do Talking History, the Italian Unification, us, and the first episode we did, the Bohemian Podcast,
great
I believe.
Show. Yeah. Yeah. We had a great show. Our unsung hero for Bohemian Podcast was
Yara Zimmerman, of
there
course.
There you go. Yep. The very famous Czech mythical man.
Yeah. And Zach Twamley, who did When Diplomacy Fails. All great shows. And so you have kind of 10-minute snippets of each show on this collage. And in episode 2, there'll be a 10-minute episode of History of Alchemy. So stay tuned for that. Again, that's at historypodcasters.com and click on podcast. All right. So thank you very much for listening.
Thanks. Have a good night.
You've been listening to the History of Alchemy podcast with Travis Dow and Pete Coleman. For more information about this episode, other episodes, and other information about alchemy, alchemists, and related subjects, visit historyofalchemy.com. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, review, and don't forget to rate us. We'd love to hear from you. Send your comments, ideas, and corrections to podcast@historyofalchemy.com or get in touch via Facebook on the History of Alchemy podcast page or Twitter at Alchemy Podcast. Tune in to our sister podcast all about the Czech Republic, Bohemicon, which is also available on iTunes or on bohemicon.com. Until next time on the History of Alchemy podcast, thank you for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.